Hi everyone. It is my great pleasure to introduce you to Manikanta Kotaru. He's here as an intern this summer. He's working with Manya Krishna and I on a wireless project for VR, and he's going to talk today about his work at Stanford with his advisor Sachin Gatti on position tracking for VR using commodity Wi-Fi.
Hi all, thank you Eduardo, and thank you all for being here. So today I'm going to describe how we can achieve sub-centimeter level accurate tracking using commodity Wi-Fi chips that we can buy in a retail store. This is a joint work with my advisor Sachin Gatti at Stanford University. Immersive experiences like virtual reality need extremely accurate tracking of the headset. And this is how a user experiences VR today. Current virtual reality headsets like HTC Vive and Oculus Rift, they require instrumenting the environment with dedicated sensors like these in order to track the headset. Not only these sensors have a very limited range of 1 to 3 meters, but they also severely limit the user movement. For example, here we can see that the image rendered on the headset changes as the user moves. However, as soon as the user goes outside the field of view of the sensor, the headset cannot be tracked, and the image rendered on the headset no longer responds to the user's movement. Even more annoyingly, as soon as the user turns away from the sensor while experiencing virtual reality, the headset stops tracking again. Ideally, one would desire an infrastructure-free position tracking system that does not require the user to install any dedicated sensors in the environment. And moreover, the user should be able to move freely without any restraints in her motion throughout her entire home. However hard it may be to believe, this is the state of the current VR. Either it requires a cumbersome setup, or it provides a very limited user experience. For example, consider Oculus Rift. It uses an external infrared camera like this and tracks the infrared LEDs that are present on the headset. HTC Vive uses a laser source and photodiodes on the headset in order to track the headset. These systems, in addition to requiring the user to install these specialized sensors, they also share the limitation of the restricted movement that we just talked about. There are other class of devices called as mobile virtual reality devices. For example, Samsung Gear VR and Google Daydream. So these systems use sensors that are already available in a phone in order to track the headset. However, these sensors on the phone, they can only track the orientation of the headset but not the position. So what it means is that the headset is going to respond as the user rotates her head but does not respond as the user moves along in a space. Developments in augmented reality devices, specifically Microsoft HoloLens and Google Tango, led to self-contained tracking systems, which is awesome. So what these systems do is they equip the headset with cameras and depth sensors in order to track it. However, these systems are known to have problems in low-light conditions or when the user is facing a textureless surface like a plain wall. Moreover, these systems are too complex to be embedded in simple virtual reality accessories like hand motion controllers. So we worked on developing this system, YCapture, that uses the ubiquitous Wi-Fi signals that are present around us in order to track the headset. So before I get into details of how YCapture works, I just want to show what this means for virtual reality tracking. So here I attached an Oculus DK2 headset with a Wi-Fi chip. Oculus requires this external camera to be placed within a couple of meters from the headset in order to track it. However, the Wi-Fi access points that are tracking the Wi-Fi chip, they are located much farther away at the corners of this 6-meter by 6-meter room. So here to the bottom right, I'm showing the actual experiment I'm performing. That is how I move the headset. Here I show how the trajectory estimated by Wi-Fi, and here I show the trajectory estimated by Oculus. In all these diagrams, they also show the position of the Oculus camera, and the dotted line represents the field of view boundary of the Oculus camera. So as I move the headset, we can clearly see that the trajectory estimated by Wi-Fi resembles the trajectory estimated by Oculus pretty closely. However, unlike Oculus, Wi-Fi-based system does not require the user to install any dedicated sensors at all. Now I'm going to conduct a similar experiment as before. However, initially, I moved the headset outside the field of view of the Oculus camera. Wi-Fi, being a system which has no field of view limitation, tracks the headset without any issues. However, Oculus starts tracking the system only once the headset is inside the field of view of the camera. Now, finally, I'm going to show an experiment where the headset is turned away from the camera. This represents a scenario where the user is turning away from the tracking sensor. Here, for the entire duration, Oculus has no idea what is happening, whereas Wi-Fi just keeps on tracking the headset without any problems. Now, some fine details. If we look at how a Wi-Fi chip works, it is very similar. The equations look very similar to how a time-of-flight camera like Kinect works. So in a time-of-flight camera, there is a light source which sends a reference sinusoidal signal. The camera correlates the received signal with the reference signal in order to obtain time-of-flight camera image. From the phase of this resultant signal, one can then obtain the time-of-flight information, which is the time taken for the signal to reach the camera from the light source. Even in a Wi-Fi system, at the start of each Wi-Fi transmission, the Wi-Fi signal source is going to send a reference sinusoidal transmission. The Wi-Fi chip at the receiver, it correlates the received signal with a reference signal in order to obtain this quantity called as channel state information. So this channel state information, or CSI, is similar to an image obtained by a time-of-flight camera. Here, I just want to mention that this channel state information is calculated by every Wi-Fi chip that there is for every Wi-Fi transmission that it listens to. And we intend to get time-of-flight information from this channel state information quantity. Now, let's say we equip a virtual reality headset with a Wi-Fi chip, and it is listening to Wi-Fi transmissions from an access point. Now, as the headset moves, the time of flight from the access point to the headset changes. Here, I represent the trajectory of the headset by using this vector delta. And the phase of the received signal changes in proportion with the time of flight. Specifically, the proportionality constant is 2 pi times the Wi-Fi frequency. Wi-Fi typically uses a 5 gigahertz radio waves. So what it means that even a small change in the time of flight of few picoseconds registers itself as a significant change in the phase of the received signal. This translates itself to saying that we can accurately detect even millimeter level motions of the virtual reality headset by using the Wi-Fi signals. Sounds pretty good. However, I want to mention that the best prior work
lambda, after which it will come back again. So what do you do after that?
For the lambda to actually come back over the 2 pi degrees, you have to be traveling at like 500 kilometers per hour.
So you're saying that humans move so
yes.
slow that...
Yeah, the
so
phase wrapping does not occur.
The
yep.
differential motions.
Yep. So here, the prior state of the art in Wi-Fi based positioning could at best achieve a half a meter of positioning error.
But don't you have accumulation of errors in the sense that if you, so you're just adding differences, right?
Yes.
At the end of the day. So
yes.
Is there any way to sort of, again, so fix you? In the sense you have to correct it, right? This is like errors will keep adding up after a point of time and they'll diverge. So how do you actually make sure that you can get it back to correct? I mean, how do you correct these accumulative errors?
So the corrections can be performed through localization techniques. And moreover, we can see the results, how these errors look like. We'll get to the quantitative results later in the presentation. So the state-of-the-art Wi-Fi-based positioning could at best achieve half a meter of localization error. And so it is a long shot to go from half a meter to few millimeters. So we are talking about a couple of major roadblocks here. So the first challenge is multipath. Given the Wi-Fi wavelength, which is like few centimeters, and typical object size in a typical indoor environment, everything is a reflector, like walls, monitors, tables, everything. So the actual Wi-Fi signal that a headset receives is the superposition of the signals that is obtained from all these reflected signals. So here, I'm showing the time of flight of the signal along two paths that are reaching the headset along directions R1 and R2. So the time of flight along each path depends upon the direction of the path and the trajectory of the headset. C here is just the speed of light. And the actual Wi-Fi signal that you obtain along each path is a simple complex exponential of this time of flight. So here, this represents the Wi-Fi signal that is obtained from the first path. Here we have the Wi-Fi signal that is obtained from the second path that is coming along direction R2. And the overall Wi-Fi signal is obtained as a superposition of both these signals. If one naively tries to estimate time of flight from the phase of this overall received signal, this is how it is going to look like. Although the time of flight along each path somehow looks like a headset's trajectory, the time of flight obtained from the phase of the overall signal looks very different from the underlying trajectory. So essentially, the multipath phenomenon is distorting the time of flight values. There is an even bigger challenge, actually. Remember how I said that a Wi-Fi chip is similar to a time of flight camera? Well, there is one major difference. In a time of flight camera, the light source and the camera, they are co-located. They share the same clock. So the time of flight value that you are going to measure corresponds to the actual time of flight. However, in a Wi-Fi system, the Wi-Fi signal source and the Wi-Fi receiver, they are different devices. For example, a Wi-Fi access point that is transmitting Wi-Fi signals is different from your mobile phone that is receiving those Wi-Fi signals. So these devices being different, they use different clocks. And there is a time offset between these two clocks. And worse, this offset actually varies with time. Let's see why. A clock is nothing but a simple oscillator, and it measures time by counting the number of oscillations it has performed. Now, let's say we ask this oscillator to oscillate at a frequency of 5 gigahertz, which is a typical Wi-Fi frequency. Then it cannot oscillate at exactly 5 gigahertz. It is going to operate at a frequency of 5 gigahertz plus or minus 100 kilohertz. And this frequency actually varies with time because oscillators are unstable. Now here, I show the oscillations at the transmitter clock and at a Wi-Fi receiver clock. We can clearly see that the number of oscillations counted by the transmitter is different from the number of oscillations counted by the receiver, leading to a time offset between the transmitter's and the receiver's clock. And moreover, as the time progresses, this offset actually varies. So this random clock offset is going to further pollute the phase of the received signal. So the actual time of flight values that you are going to obtain at the Wi-Fi receiver is the time of flight values as though there is no clock offset, plus this additional clock offset that you are adding. So here, this represents the overall Wi-Fi signal that is obtained at the Wi-Fi receiver, and this term in the brackets represents the effect of the multipath, where I'm adding the signals from two different paths. And this additional phase offset is due to the clock offset between the transmitter and the receiver. And if we just do a quick math, let us say that the headset obtained two Wi-Fi transmissions with a gap of 10 milliseconds. During this period, let us say that the headset moved by 10 millimeters. Then the time of flight actually changed by 30 picoseconds. However, during the same duration of 10 milliseconds, the clocks have drifted apart by more than 200 nanoseconds, assuming there is 100 kilohertz uncertainty in the frequency. So what it means is that the time of flight change that you are trying to measure, which is 30 picoseconds, is overwhelmed by the noise of 200 nanoseconds that you are adding due to the clock drift. So we are essentially trying to find needle in a haystack here. And this random clock offset,
so Wi-Fi receivers do clock offset correction, right? How much is that? I forgot the numbers. So every receiver has to do this, I mean, for every packet. So they actually use the preamble to do clock offset correction, right? The carrier frequency offset estimation and correction. Now, what is that? What is the amount they actually get on Wi-Fi receivers today?
So you need to correct the clock offset, but that clock offset is valid for only that Wi-Fi transmission.
Yeah, sure.
So, like you transmitted the Wi-Fi signal is received. Now you, when you start the Wi-Fi transmission again, like there is no clock offset correction between two Wi-Fi transmissions.
Wi-Fi transmission does that, right? So after Smith and Cox, there's a carrier frequency estimation that the receiver does and corrects the phase for every single subcarrier. So that is already done for every, at a per packet level in Wi-Fi transmissions.
Per packet level, it cannot be done in for two packets. Because you have to constantly send something called as pilot signals, which are reference signals, which allow you to track the phase change. Now, but when you are not transmitting a Wi-Fi packet,
yeah,
you cannot do that pilot transmission, and you lost that correction.
Okay.
So every Wi-Fi transmission has to individually perform it. So there is actually a clock offset between Wi-Fi transmissions.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm guessing you're also doing that, right? You're transmitting a packet and estimating time of flight or something, right? You're doing
yes.
the transmission. So you're periodically sending it very often, I'm hoping. I don't know how you do it.
You have to send it every 4 microseconds.
4 microseconds?
Yes. Even shorter than that, actually.
So you could keep sending the STS sequence continuously, right? Because STS sequence is 4 microseconds, so you could keep cycling the STS sequence in a loop.
But you cannot always occupy the medium.
I see. So you don't want to do that either.
You cannot occupy. Wi-Fi does not allow you to occupy. So.
And linear interpolation doesn't work. Between
No. Actually. Like the clock
of,
this is exactly how the clock offset is going to look like. So the linear interpolation is not going to work. Yes.
I see.
This is how it looks like.
But the clock offset is because of the differences between the carrier frequencies, right? And that's changing a lot.
So actually the Wi-Fi community so far has considered the phase that you obtain from different Wi-Fi transmissions as a random independent signal. And this random clock offset is the primary reason why Wi-Fi community did so. And what I'm going to show today is how we can actually derive some meaning from this apparently random signal. Now, let us first solve the multipath problem. This is not something completely new. So this can be so by using multiple antennas at the headset, one can actually resolve the signal that is obtained from different paths. So let us see why by considering the signal that is coming from a particular direction R, and by plotting the time of flight at different antennas of the headset. Now here we can see that the time of flight at different antennas changes with time because the headset is moving and there is this clock drift. However, the relative time of flight of different antennas compared to the time of flight that is obtained at the first antenna is pretty much constant. And this relative time of flight just depends upon the direction of the path and distance between the antennas. And this happens because the signal from the transmitter to different antennas in the receiver travels slightly different distances. And this difference in the distances manifests itself as a small differences in the time of flight. And this relative time of flight remains constant as long as the direction of the signal from the access point to the headset remains the same, which is a valid assumption as long as the movement of the headset is like small compared to the distance between the access point and the headset. Now, based on this insight, let us try to write the Wi-Fi signal that you obtain at the 3 antennas for the 2 paths that we considered before. So for the first path, if we just assume that the time of flight for the first antenna is tau1, then the time of flight at the rest of the antennas have a small additional offset, which depends upon the direction of the path. And as before, the actual Wi-Fi signal that you obtain from that particular path for the 3 antennas is a simple complex exponential of this time of flights. We can write similar equations for the Wi-Fi signal obtained from the second path, and the overall Wi-Fi signal that you obtain for the 3 antennas is the sum of the signal from these 2 paths. I'm just going to rewrite this equation as though the signal that is obtained at the 3 antennas looks as if it is obtained from a linear combination of 2 vectors. Here, the elements in the vector just depend upon the direction of the paths, R1 and R2. And the weights in the linear combination depend upon the time of flight along the 2 paths, tau1 and tau2. And this time of flight actually varies with time as the headset moves and the clock offset drifts. So the channel state information that you obtain at the 3 antennas for a different Wi-Fi transmission looks as if you are obtaining multiple linear combinations of the same 2 vectors with different weights. This is actually in a standard form to be fed into an algorithm called as MUSIC. What this algorithm does is if you provide multiple linear combinations of a set of vectors, then it is going to spit out the elements of the vectors and the weights in the linear combination. So here, once we feed the channel state information from different Wi-Fi transmission to this MUSIC algorithm, then we are going to obtain the elements of this vector. And once we obtain the elements of this vector, it is trivial to identify the directions of the paths, R1 and R2, because we already know the distance between the antennas. And if we obtain the weights in the linear combination, then it is trivial to obtain the time of flight along both the paths, tau 1 and tau 2, because we know the frequency of the frequency at which the Wi-Fi is operating. So just to repeat, we now know the directions of the paths, and we know the time of flight of the signal along both the paths. Let us just recall what this time of flight along each path consists of. It consists of the actual time of flight, which depends upon the direction of the path and the trajectory of the headset, plus this additional offset, which is the problematic term. And here lies our simple key insight. This problematic term is actually the same for all the paths. This is actually surprising, because what I'm suggesting here is to actually use the multipath to overcome the clock offset challenge. This multipath is usually treated as a complication, a challenge in time of flight camera systems or a Wi-Fi localization systems. And even I describe the multipath as a challenge because it is actually distorting the time of flight values. However, the same multipath has come to our rescue to overcome the clock drift. So if we just subtract the time of flight from both these paths, although we cannot estimate the clock offset, the clock offset term has just disappeared. And we know the rest of the terms except for the trajectory delta, which is of interest anyways. So I already showed a functioning of the system where I moved the headset and showed the trajectory of the headset. But however, I just want to conclude by showing the performance of the system using some quantitative metrics.
What's the intuition that this delta is the same?
The intuition for the delta is the same is, okay, we are combining the signal from both the paths, and the offset that you are adding is the same for both the paths. Because the offset is being added at the receivers, it has nothing to do with the paths.
Okay.
So you are sending some signal, it is traveling different time of flight. Yeah, different distances. And it is going to accumulate different time of flight. However, at the end you are adding this additional offset because of the hardware differences. But that has nothing to do with the actual environment. So it is only being added at the end. So that is why
it has to arrive at the same time though. Let's say I have a measurement right now and then I have another measurement tomorrow. Would the offset still be the same?
It would not be the same. So for this to actually work, these two paths should be arriving at a close proximity. However, given the speed of light and typical distances that the light has to travel, it is like 3 nanoseconds, 9 nanoseconds, very small amount. The clock offset can be treated the same for this small.
Well, the typical indoor environment has 125 nanoseconds, up to 125 nanoseconds of.
That is the farthest path. But consider like the farthest path is 125 nanoseconds. But so yeah. So to implement the system, I used Intel 5300 Wi-Fi chips. And I used a command line API available that allows me to query for the channel state information from these chips. And I placed 4 access points at the corners of this 5 meter by 6 meter room. And within by 3 centimeter by 3 centimeter area, a Wi-Fi chip is manually placed at different locations. So I actually created this trajectory within a space that measures like half a finger. And I tried to recreate the trajectory by using the Wi-Fi signals. The trajectory could be recreated with an accuracy of 1.5 millimeters. Moreover, when a Wi-Fi chip is completely stationary, the jitter in the positions that are provided by the Y-capture is just 0.25 millimeters. Both these numbers are very much comparable to an Oculus Rift DK to headset, Oculus DK to headset, but only slightly worse. But a Wi-Fi is providing like much more additional functionalities like ease of deployment and resistance to occlusion. So now I conducted even more extensive set of experiments. So what I did was I performed 100 trajectories and I attached a Wi-Fi chip to an Oculus DK2 headset, like in the previous demos. And here is a sample trajectory where the blue curve represents the trajectory estimated by Y-capture. And I measured the positioning error by position-to-position distance between the ground truth trajectory and the trajectory estimated by Wi-Fi for each point on each of these 100 trajectories. And Y-capture could achieve sub-centimeter level tracking accuracy. And this is the first Wi-Fi-based system that could achieve a sub-centimeter level tracking accuracy. Just to compare, the state-of-the-art Wi-Fi-based positioning could achieve a meter-level median error. 1 meter-level error is essentially useless for virtual reality tracking. So I performed 100 more trajectories, but here I occluded the target from the access points by using wall and furniture. Even in these scenarios, YCapture performs a similar accuracy because these obstacles are really transparent for the Wi-Fi waves. So to conclude, I presented YCapture, which enables sub-centimeter level position tracking using commodity Wi-Fi chips. And by virtue of using Wi-Fi signals, the system provides resistance to occlusion and is insensitive to illumination levels. And by improving upon the state-of-the-art Wi-Fi positioning by two orders of magnitude, this system can potentially enable applications that were previously deemed impossible with Wi-Fi, like position tracking for virtual reality. Thank you, and I look forward for any questions and feedback.
So when we actually tested this, So when you actually tested each trajectory, so my question is more with the accumulation stuff that you discussed, right? So the one point, like the error that you're showing, which is the 0.25 mm or 0.5 mm that you're showing, right? That error is over one trajectory average. So you have 100 trajectories, and then you take an average over one trajectory. How are you doing that? How is that?
For each point on the trajectory.
Okay, good. Yeah. So that's what I wanted to know. So this and each of these trajectories are separate trajectories, right? You do it and then you do it and so on.
Okay.
Right. And this is the relative thing that you're measuring because initial location is not known. So you're essentially. So if you have this, let's say 0.25 or 1 millimeter error, you will start adding that in the sense that so I don't know how quickly you're sampling this. So let's say how quickly are you doing that?
6 milliseconds, 10 milliseconds.
6 milliseconds. So that means about 300 times or 200 times, let's say, every second. So you know how standard deviations keeps adding up, right? So square root of whatever. So the variance of your thing, if this variance is around half a millimeter, then over 200, you've already increased that by square root of 200, and that will keep sort of accumulating, which means over 10 seconds, you're already crossing quite a lot. So the problem that I'm seeing is that there is no other localization scheme that can correct you until you reach that 1 meter mark, because this gap is huge. So how do you correct this periodically? I mean, do you rely on optical or what do you do? Because
you can actually use the way to correct is by using the Wi-Fi access points location. Since the Wi-Fi access points are stationary, you can locate it. You can localize it periodically. Actually, you can combine both these sensors.
But that is nothing close to your millimeter level, right? It's much higher. So you'll have to wait until the point that your error accumulates. So that itself has a standard deviation of, let's say, 50 centimeters or 1 meter. So you want an accuracy of, 1 millimeter or 2 millimeters, right? That's fine in a relative sense. Now it's accumulating. You can't do any, because now you have to use that 1 meter error to correct your millimeter level thing. So how do you actually, I'm talking with respect to the absolute location. So how do you actually manage your error accumulation then without any other scheme to correct you?
Okay. So when I said that you can use the Wi-Fi localization techniques, I'm not suggesting that you have like Wi-Fi localization estimates in order to correct for these millimeter level errors. What I'm suggesting is, since the Wi-Fi access point is stationary, as you look at the phases, so a typical example would be like the phase would come back to If you know the location of the Wi-Fi access points.
You mean the stationary Wi-Fi access
points? Yeah, the stationary Wi-Fi access points.
2 millimeter level accuracy.
Yes.
Okay.
But that is a orthogonal problem.
It's an orthogonal problem.
It's an orthogonal problem.
Let's accept that we know them precisely.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you can know. You can know the phase difference between a known position of the Wi-Fi access point and your own Wi-Fi chip.
But isn't that what you're using for time of flight anyway?
For the time of flight, yes, I'm using it. Since I described the phase change to measure the time of flight difference,
mm-hmm.
that is why there is this doubt whether this error accumulates or not.
I mean, you are doing relative addition, so it will accumulate.
Yeah. But given that, the phase information between a known Wi-Fi access point's location, if you know the difference between, you know the phase between the Wi-Fi access point and the Oculus headset to the same accuracy?
I didn't get that. What was that again?
Except for the phase wrapping,
mm-hmm.
you know the distance between the access point and your target Wi-Fi chip to the same accuracy,
mm-hmm.
to a millimeter level.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There is phase wrapping, so that's the only reason. That's why you're doing relative, and then you're saying
that phase wrapping is on the order of few centimeters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can actually correct for that by knowing your distances to multiple access points
within lambda accuracy. Again, it has its own standard deviation of error.
Yes.
Okay, we can take this offline. It's fine. So, yeah, but you see the problem that I'm asking, right? Which is that. In any, even for gyros, for example, in cell phones, gyros add up, and then you have to correct it in some way, and they use the absolute magnetometer of compass to get it right. So you need some other mechanism to make sure that your accumulative errors are going down. And I was just wondering what that other, because Wi-Fi.
Okay. Let me just conclude this. So what I'm saying is Wi-Fi itself is the correcting mechanism, because not only the phase difference, but the actual phase between a stationary Wi-Fi access point and your Wi-Fi chip can be measured with the same accuracy. The Wi-Fi itself is a correcting mechanism, actually.
Okay, I think we'll discuss later.
Okay.
What's the minimum number of Wi-Fi access points that you need for this to work?
So one access point is necessary and sufficient. To get these particular numbers, we used 4 access points. The actual numbers with a single access point, we will be doing an analysis and making it public. Yes. So, yeah.
But let me understand that. So with one access point, you're just getting time of arrival difference, which is just a distance.
Yes, for relative.
The vector. So you're just getting a magnitude.
Because you are getting multiple paths.
So using multiple paths.
So you
get the direction from music or something. So you get the direction from music.
There is a single access point, but there are multiple paths.
So you know the location of the access point, and you know the direction using music.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the change in... So am I understanding this right? So you know the location of the access point. You know the direction of this through music. And then you know the displacement. So you're using that direction, music direction, and the TDOA distance to find your vector, right? Is that what you're doing?
Sure, yes.
Yeah. Got it.
How many antennas do you need on the receiver side for this to work?
Two are necessary and sufficient, two antennas. We use 3 antennas because a commodity Wi-Fi chip has 3 antennas anyways.
So this work by Kyle Jamieson, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was also using music to find, and he was using 8 or 6. And why did he end up? Did you do something different in the music algorithm itself, or something? Which why did he have to use 6 or 8 to get his results?
Well, that is a traditional. To start with, that is a traditional positioning work that can only achieve like a meter level localization error.
No. He was using he was estimating direction using music, right? He was
not.
So the question is, why did he need 6 to 8 antennas to get his direction accurately using music?
So that just builds upon my previous work. So in order to obtain this directions accurately, the number of sensors you need to have should be greater than the number of paths in the environment, right? So typically we have like 5 to 8 different paths in an environment. So you need at least those many antennas. But what? But in Wi-Fi, the signal is transmitted not only on different antennas, but also at different frequencies. So when you also include the like 64 subcarriers, you are suddenly having like so many more measurements, so many more sensors, but the number of paths still remain the same. So by using this additional channel state information that you obtain from different subcarriers or different frequencies, in addition to the different antennas, you can actually overcome that limitation. But that is orthogonal work, yeah.
So is the device connected to these, are all these Wi-Fi access points set for the same network, and that's what the device is connected to, mm-hmm. So all of them?
Actually, in order to obtain this channel state information, the device need not be connected to anything. Say your mobile phone, it actually listens to every Wi-Fi transmission that is happening, okay? Calculates this channel state information, looks whether if the Wi-Fi transmission is disjoint to it or not, and then drops the packet or accepts the packet. So channel state information, to obtain the channel state information, you need not be connected to any access point at all, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
What happens in an environment when you have like many wireless access points that are like in the same channel, right? Like, will that decrease the accuracy of your approach? Like, I mean, like, it's normally many apartments that have like neighbors with like 10, 15 access points, and how will that affect the precision in this case and the accuracy?
Yeah, so the thing I want to mention is whenever a Wi-Fi transmission happens, the rest of the Wi-Fi chips, they just shut up.
Okay.
They listen to an ongoing Wi-Fi transmission and they just turn off their transmitter.
But would that introduce delays because they had to wait longer for transmission?
Yes. So yeah, they have to wait. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we are talking about say 10 devices trying to operate in a single Wi-Fi environment. The maximum Wi-Fi transmission length is 2 milliseconds, mm-hmm. right? The typical Wi-Fi transmissions are much, much smaller than a full packet size. So what is going to happen is you will have enough time to actually round robin. And 10 milliseconds is actually, a current position tracking headset, they estimate the position at 90 hertz. So even if you get one chance to transmit every 10 milliseconds, still you're good.
Right. Curious question, did you actually try to build that application using the system and get a feeling of how it feels to use it with this tracking as opposed to using the built-in Oculus or by tracking?
We built an application, but not when we were writing this paper.
I see.
Yeah, these results were before, yeah. During this time, these were the kind of tragic results.
So basically, you're saying use Wi-Fi instead of IR.
Yes, IR or laser. Yeah.
And so this begs the question of what was the fundamental reason that these companies decided to use IR? And secondly, what do you lose? Is it higher cost? There has to be. Is it all flowers and roses, or is there anything that they lose?
People could not use it because. It's a meter level error is useless actually. So this actually changed the game by actually improving it by 100x improvement. So
are these companies jumping up and down to use
this? Hopefully.
So I guess my question here, maybe a comment. So I believe that using IR will give you a more predictable error. And it seems that the error it will change depending on obstacles or I guess maybe could that be the reason that the error and the position and the latency is more predictable with IR than with Wi-Fi?
The Wi-Fi accuracy definitely depends upon the kind of environment you are in, but the functioning of the system itself is independent of the environment. So yeah, the errors might change, but you also have an what I did not mention in this talk is you're also given estimates of the error.
Oh, okay.
So that's again something that can be useful.
I see.
When you talk about unpredictable errors.
Cool.
How about like mobile hotspots? Is there any way of determining if there are mobile hotspots in the environment and filtering those signals out that you've thought of?
What is a mobile?
Like if you turn your phone onto a hotspot, so it becomes an access point of its own.
Okay.
Wouldn't that interfere with the signals that the receivers?
Stationary.
It's not stationary.
Yeah. So the system assumes that the access point is stationary. So if the access point is moving because it is a mobile hotspot, then yeah, right now I think that it has a issue. But
so
maybe there is a trick to overcome that. I can get back later.
So do you limit it to the access points you know are stationary? Like do you configure it only for the access points that you set up? Or like if you ran it here, you've probably got like 100, 150 Wi-Fi signals. Would that work with that many?
Yes, it will. Because as I said, a Wi-Fi chip for every Wi-Fi transmission, it has to calculate the CSI. And
right.
The information that I'm using is the CSI. And so, and each Wi-Fi transmission is also encoded with this hardware address called MAC address.
Right.
So you can always correlate, like, this signal is obtained from this access point. This signal is obtained
right.
from
so
this access point.
So assuming they're all stationary.
Yes, stationarity is important.
And in these experiments, did you filter it to those four MAC addresses?
Yes.
You knew about? Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
One more. So, like, for a home deployment, how do you imagine the initial configuration? I mean, you need to know the exact position of the access point to a precision of millimeters, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you imagine, like, someone like buys the headset and needs to configure the router for their position? How would you imagine, like, doing that in a simple way or a friendly way?
We did not come up with a, like, I did not come up, give a completely complete thought to that. But there are works like SLAM, which kind of, like, simultaneously try to localize and also track your, like, in SLAM, like, you are trying to figure out the environment, but also trying to track yourself, like a visual SLAM technique. Here, the environment is like the position of the Wi-Fi access point, and you are still trying to track the Wi-Fi chip. So maybe we can borrow some techniques from there in order to enable it.
I said you will run that in the router, right?
Hmm?
You will run that in the router to help it.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in SLAM, we are assuming that the environment is stationary, and you are moving
okay.
in that, right?
Okay.
Similar, here, the environment is nothing but the access point that is stationary. And,
do you know if the API is available to read the state? Are
yeah, it is
Windows?
Available in the paper.
Do you know if they're available on Windows?
I do
so
not
all
think
chipsets
so.
Actually let you read CSI. Some chipsets do and some chipsets don't. So, yeah, I think more and more chipsets are now opening up, at least. And also, it's not just reading CSIs. It's also about what subcarriers they let you read. And I mean, there are differences with respect to chipsets.
So just to add on to that, all the major Wi-Fi chips, they have like a API tool, say like Etheros, Intel, Qualcomm,
yeah.
to just query this channel state information. But not all the devices have a publicly available API. The reason I used Intel 5300 cards is it has a publicly available API. So that I can actually share the system implementation with others. The rest of the chips, for example, Etheros, if you sign an NDA with them, they are going to allow you access to the tool that queries the CSI.
And so then what operating system did you use?
Oh, I used Linux, Ubuntu.
Linux. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but whether Windows can use it or not. Maybe they have like some internal APIs that they're not exposing. Cool.
Super cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.